welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
The fun-sized version of Idle Red Hands, without all that well-researched, insightful, thoughtful discussion, or inspiration for your role-playing campaigns. I don't know what's left, but that's what this is.
I had to not laugh at fun-size.
It's that unsatisfying square inch of Snickers bar. And today, we have a guest.
Yes.
So, Chris, would you like to introduce our guest?
Sure. Our guest is Jamie.
Hello.
Yeah, I don't know what else I'm supposed to introduce.
Well, so, yes. Okay, good.
They're part of our gaming group here at home, also running like Monster Hearts campaign and a bunch of other games. Also co-worker, so play with them at work a lot.
Yes. Mm. And one of the most fun co-players I've ever played with. Yeah.
I see how it is now.
Yeah. Right? You've hung in there through an amazing array of Saturday morning cartoon role play, Death Watch. You've played in some really fun stuff and been a great cyberpunk party member. Yeah. So it's been really fun.
Yeah, it's been great. I played a little bit of D&D in high school, and I did some LARPing in college.
Oh, nice.
Which was great. We don't have.
Vampire the Masquerade, but the Changeling one more than the vampire one. Mm-hmm. But that mostly was just us hanging around in a coffee shop where the like main people worked and talking to each other in character.
Ah.
So, I mean, I guess that was the thing.
It's really been fun playing with you, and it's sad to see you going.
Yeah, I'm going to be leaving Japan at the end of May. So we're trying to wrap up our Monster Hearts campaign. We've got one more episode left.
Right.
Last time we had some fun.
Some
fun.
This was the entire episode.
We had that blood orgy, but our characters didn't actually do anything.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
With correction, did not do anything with each other.
Yes, with each other.
With each other. Right. Not doing anything implies that you didn't do anything, which is not the case at all.
Yeah. My character did a lot of things.
Yeah, with Jamie's character, the most I've gotten off of her is chewing gum. So
that's right.
That's real sweet kid, but here's some gum.
Let's talk about what we've been up to this week. So, Chris, what have you been doing gaming-wise?
Apart from playing two-player games at lunch with Jamie.
Nice.
Working on a zine, which sounds weird.
Oh, really?
This is what I just printed out and copied, cut here.
Oh, nice. So, yeah. Excellent.
I'm also looking at printing options for Lulu.
Oh, good, good. So, it's something you're going to put online as a PDF, or you want to...
I'm still deciding the format because it's like a journal writing game, kind of like The Beast. So that's why I think a physical product would be really cool because then the prompts are like right there and then you got like lines to actually write on. We were discussing being in Japan, shipping is kind of a pain in the butt. So Lulu was real attractive because like it's print and delivery.
Yes. Great. How about you, Jamie?
Aside from playing games at lunch, I've been thinking about doing something involving fairies because I recently devoured a podcast, Mabel, and it really got me going on my old fairy obsession, and now I'm like rereading Grimm fairy tales and like making a mind map of like themes and topics and things that might work out into a game or a story or something. Not entirely sure yet.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Lots of spinning, I decided, in Grimm's fairy tales.
Yes,
You better keep your dang promises.
All right. Well, this week, more miniature painting. So this was the end, actually, this past Monday was the end of that Kickstarter that we had done the interview for. So we interviewed Kasowinski from Tomb Guardians Miniatures, and he sent us some samples.
Oh,
and
cool.
So, but they came in the last 24 hours of the Kickstarter. So
right.
I did like a 4-hour live stream where I kind of assembled them, primed them, and did some painting, just some basic painting to just talk about and promote their Kickstarter. And they hit their first, maybe second stretch goal. So they got some of the good stuff unlocked, but this is going to be kind of an ongoing thing. So hopefully we can keep in touch and keep people updated because they're releasing factions for this dungeon crawling game. And so you form your party by choosing a character from these factions. And it was a system that they're going to be releasing in the fall. So that's what I was doing. And it was fun. It was, they're really satisifying old school metal miniatures.
Oh, metal. Wow.
And I forgot how satisfying those are. And it's just the right, the sculptors they have work for Reaper and WizKids.
Okay, cool.
So they've got that old school kind of hand sculpted feel. And I forgot how satisfying those types of miniatures are to paint. So that was a real fun, they turned out well. And it was a really fun thing to do.
Awesome.
Well, you guys were talking about your lunchtime game. So I guess as far as future topics for the podcast, I would really like you guys to do an episode where you talked about how a two-player role-playing session goes. And especially because during lunch, you're limited to your hour of lunch.
Yeah.
So you have to take that into consideration. So can you talk a little bit about how that came to past, like how you decided to do it and what was how it goes.
Sure. I think it started because Jamie was just like, hey, you want to play Perfect Unadvised?
Yeah, I think that was it. Yeah, we started with Perfect. Yeah. I'd gotten a few games that were good for two players, and I figured, hey, we've got an hour every day where we're playing games anyway. Why not do some role-playing games? And from there, like, we didn't play Perfect all that long.
No, we didn't.
And then we both are super obsessed with Monster Hearts. So I suggested doing a lunchtime campaign, which, God, how long has that been going on?
About it. Over a year, I think.
Yeah. Oh my god! Real time.
Yeah. Because we started playing outside.
Oh my god!
Meaning it was warm
true.
Enough around this time.
Oh, wow. Oh my
and
we're god!
Kind of back around
yeah, we've passed like maybe 2 weeks in game.
Yeah, yeah, more than that. We're like a month.
Yeah. Oh, we did start during orientation, but then we time slipped because I wanted to be around Halloween. And since Halloween, we've gone like 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
In game
yeah.
time, yeah.
Yeah.
So we've all played Monster Hearts together. What's the biggest difference in a two-player session versus a big group of like a seven-player session?
Since Jimmy was running it, like I think the MC has to do a lot more with side characters.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Like there's going to be a lot of talking to yourself as the MC. Because as long as there's more than two people in a scene, you've got to keep everyone going and participating think about what their desires are, what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, like, you can really, really, really focus on what the other person wants, like what the character wants to do.
Right.
And like, as long as the other person's having fun, like, you don't have to worry about sharing the spotlight or like, oh, maybe this isn't so much fun to watch as it is to play and just do whatever.
Yeah, you don't have to manage a party.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice.
But like, as a player, I'm aware that, you know, there are large swaths where Jamie might be talking to herself as a side character. So I'm just like, okay, we can like summarize or... Mm. I think scene framing can be shared a lot more between the two players because you're aware of kind of like what's happening or you don't have to worry about what other people want to do, which sounds real selfish, but you can just go, well, that's all I'm going to do for this scene or the scene wraps there and this like, and the next one should start here. You can do it as a player a lot more aggressively than in a group because you don't have to wait for other people to say, oh, well, I wanted to do something or where are we going with you next, whereas the focus is just on the one person, which can also be kind of not tiring, but like sometimes when you're playing in a group, you're like, okay, I just want to kind of sit back and watch for a little bit. There's not the chance to do that in a two-player game.
Right.
So. Yeah, you're always on.
Yep.
Mm.
Yep.
And what about the length of the sessions? Like, you know, within a lunchtime, is that frustrating sometimes? I mean, do you like hit a place where you want to keep going? Like, oh, we got to.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. But then it's also kind of like, you know that, well, at least in our case, you know that you're going to come back to it the next day or really soon. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like binge watching a TV show where you're like, well, okay, stop in there. Maybe you have to go do something else. But it's not going to be a week or a month or whatever until we come back to it. So,
oh, that's a nice comparison though, like binge watching because you are playing. Like,
yeah, we're totally binging this.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great. So, what other systems?
Perfect Unrevised, which was also done by Avery Alder. We did Starcrossed, a couple things, which was real hard because in that one we couldn't finish a game and sent it to Jenga Tower based. It's real difficult to reset up a Jenga Tower.
Right.
So we got we played like two times, and we got at most two sessions out of each game because once the Jenga Tower got to a certain point, we're like, we can't recreate that, even if we take a picture. And then we just started Coffee Shop AU.
Yep, from the Cozy Game Jam.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Those were kind of specifically not. Oh, those weren't specifically designed for two people. They were kind of designed to just be kind of low key.
Perfect Unrevised can be a larger group of people, but I think StarCrossed and Coffee Shop AU are both just for two people.
Yeah, StarCrossed is definitely only for two, and Coffee Shop AU for two. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Yeah, I really look forward to that. I want to hear like a more elaborate discussion about how that works and try to inspire people to not only existing two-player systems, but try to adapt games that they want to play, you know, just for two people. And is that possible?
It definitely is. Because like Jamie said, Monster Hearts and Perfect Unrevised are not specifically two-player only games.
Mm, right. Well, another topic that I wanted to mention just quickly is Things from the Flood, the sequel for Tales from the Loop, is coming out, or is shipping. The Kickstarter is shipping, and it's probably going to be in stores real quick after that. And this is a sequel, whereas Tales from the Loop is set in the 80s, kind of Stranger Things, Goonies, like kids in the 80s in encountering kind of strange effects of the loop. This is a 90s kind of aging the kids up to teenagers, even though you could play up to a teenager, and I think you aged out of that group at 15,
okay,
maybe 18, but you're playing more as teens. And I really like what they wrote as a description for this sequel. Things are different now. The world does not seem innocent anymore. You are no longer kids, but teens, trying to find your way in a decade of change, both within and around you. And that was a thing when we were reviewing Tales from the Loop that came up, is that it's difficult for people today to be as uncynical as 80s kids were. Mm-hmm. And to kind of get that, you know, you can't quite capture that tone. And you even see that in series, TV series, like Stranger Things. Like the kids, it's an odd, the jeopardy and the things that they're in are a little scarier. And they make the tone of the show is a lot darker and they can't keep it at that light kind of Spielberg level. And so I think this is something that will allow you to do that, to make people more comfortable in a time that they can actually remember and not let the kids aren't going to be so innocent, and it's not going to be as playful. And I think it's a nice update to that system, because that was the one thing that we questioned, is it might be fun for a one shot, but how into those characters can you get, and can you really recreate that innocent 80s kid dynamic?
Mm-hmm. And, interesting. Yeah. I wonder if, because I'd heard the same thing, where Things from the Flood is a lot more cynical. Mm-hmm. I guess main characters can possibly die in that, which is something that definitely can't happen in Tales from the Loop. Right. Kids can't die is one of the core rule in that. But I wonder if those two games from running The Sprawl, I got kind of burnt out on that, just because it's so dystopian and so is the rest of the world. And sometimes you want to escape that. So I wonder if Tales from the Loop would be like, I'm tired of the cynicism. Mm-hmm. Let's go play something kind of hopeful and innocent for a little bit. Yeah. Whereas we can't really maintain that. Let's go back to, Things from the Flood,
right,
when you need that cynicism.
Yeah. I don't know if it's going to be set up so you can actually take characters that you had, because what in the storyline, what happens is the loop is dismantled. So everything that's kind of creating the weird robot creatures and everything in that world is gone. But there's like this corporation that takes its place. I don't know if you can actually progress your 80s characters into the 90s. And that might be really depressing. That might be really sad to watch these kids just lose their hopefulness and then be able to die. Yeah. So I'm curious how those two things are going to interact, if you're actually able to carry over characters, or they want you to just kind of start again because it's a new setting.
Yeah. But even if they do want you to kind of start again, you could probably do flashbacks. That would be an interesting thing.
I'd actually be more interested in aging the kids up. Like, you lose the innocence of childhood and the innocence of that kind of structure of the game. Now you're older, wiser, you can die.
Jaded,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, all 15-year-olds. Yeah.
And it's going to have the same great art that the previous game did. And so, I'm just excited to see what that's like. But I think that's interesting that they noticed that. That's the same thing we noticed looking at the game. They noticed that, too.
Do you think that's also a reflection of media? Where, 80s media is a lot more kind of Spielberg-y, innocent, kind of, hey, the cop showed up and everything's fine now at the end.
Yeah.
Where 90s is a bit kind of more cynical.
Yeah, I think so. Mm. Yeah. Because we were just talking, basically in a post-Columbine, post-9/11 world, can you really imagine kids that are that carefree and are just all they're interested in is stealing cigarettes? That's not.
And then nothing will happen to them.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that they don't
steal the cigarettes.
Yeah, right. Kickstarters. So the one that I noticed. So a lot of stuff is coming up and a lot of stuff just finished that we're kind of interested in looking at, but. Odyssey of the Dragon Lords was interesting. It's an epic adventure book for 5th edition. So 5th edition D&D. And is Dungeons & Dragons like the Super Bowl? You can't say that word. You can't say that word because they keep calling it 5th edition of the world's greatest role-playing game.
I think they're just being safe.
Because it's trademarked?
Or a lot of people say that. A lot of people compatible with the world's greatest role-playing game. And we all know what they mean. And I hate that that's called the
world's greatest role-playing
game. But I think maybe it is like the Super Bowl.
Don't say it if...
Don't say it if you want to get sued.
Right.
Or unless you're an official sponsor.
Right. Yeah, that might be the case. So this is Arcanum Worlds. So Arcanum Worlds is a studio that was started by James Olin and Jesse Skye. So both of them are ex-BioWare writers, creative directors. So they've written on all the great BioWare games, Baldur's Gate and Dragon Age and Mass Effect, everything. So they're just doing an adventure book with kind of characters, settings, new classes, treasure. And it's an epic setting. So basically ancient Greece, it's Greek mythology. And if you want to play Jason and the Argonauts or Clash of the Titans, Homer's Odyssey.
Yeah,
the good one. Yes, the good one. The one with the robotic owl that they don't make fun of. Or Burgess Meredith. But they really reinforce this as an epic setting, and they want it to feel that way because they know there is Greek mythology included in just, regular D&D. Those creatures exist, but this is just kind of scaling it up into this whole world. And they created a continent where all these adventures are set. And so they wrote this with the flavor of Greek mythology and kind of this epic scale. And I'm just really interested to see, I know these writers have done some good storytelling and some really interesting character interactions. So I'm curious what they're going to do in an adventure book, and especially in a Dungeons & Dragons epic setting.
Jamie plays video games.
Much more
than I do. Yes, but my initial thing is, I wonder if writing for video games translates to writing for pen and paper role-playing games. And I'm not saying it doesn't. I would just be curious.
Jamie, what do you think?
I think that they're related, but probably you need to develop different skills in order to write something for other people to play when you have less control over every place it could go. No matter how open a computer game or video game is with an RPG, at the end of the day, like, there's only so much you can do. Like, you can only do what the creators imagined you doing you to do for the story.
That's a good point. I'm just hoping that because they've had the experience of creating characters in cultures that have an interesting interaction, that they're going to put things in those adventures that are going to allow you to kind of get in the middle of some interesting situations, some interesting conflicts, or some interesting quests and things. Because I think that's something that those games did well, that the BioWare games do well, is telling stories and it's a lot of dialogue. That's the problem. Like you're saying, they're not going to be able to write all the dialogue from the characters.
No one would guess it's a boop-snooted laser wolf.
Unless it's a lot of like boxed text where DM, read this to your players when they say this. Which I seriously doubt that's what it would be, but
Beautiful art too. Yeah, they got a really nice art director and epic, beautiful art. So it's going to be an interesting book object. And if you're interested not only in the world's greatest role-playing game, but other systems, they've already...
Everyone heard my eyes roll.
Didn't even have to look.
They've already said that, it's going to be a good source book. Yeah, cool. Not only for that.
I'd be curious to see what they kind of meant by epic.
Yes.
When you first said epic, I'm like, epic tier campaign where everything has massive hit points, does massive damage, and is like super over the top. But if it's Greek mythology, well, then yeah, everything is kind of epic just because everything's larger than life. And I'd be curious to see if that comes through in the mechanics and the setting.
Right. Because they are saying that you're challenging the gods. Like, you will be confronting the gods at some point in these campaigns.
That's hardcore.
Yes. That's some serious hit points.
Yeah, geez.
So the last thing I just want to cover really quick is we had a question that was on YouTube. It was deleted by the user, but I just wanted to touch on it because I thought it was an interesting rules kind of judgment. Another Forbidden Lands question, and it was talking about if your character has initiative, if you want initiative over an enemy, what are your options if you don't want to spend your actions to actually, if you're out of range and you want to spend your actions. So a couple of things that you can do is you're allowed to, at the beginning of the combat and beginning of each round, to swap initiative cards. So you can put yourself, instead of holding your initiative, swap between, you can only do that at the beginning before any actions are taken. So you can swap initiative to kind of put yourself in a position where you want to be.
To react to the thing.
And you can also ambush. So you're using your sneak to wait and getting a free action in that case. So you can trade your initiative to something lower, roll to be concealed, basically, and then just wait to ambush. And you get a pretty good advantage on that sneak roll. So I think those are things that Forbidden Lands does well, as providing a nice little bit of strategy, but you are always having to keep the distances in mind, kind of like what we were doing with the Death Watch campaign.
Oh, with Death Watch, yeah.
You have to kind of remember.
Some way to kind of essentially like set your spear and wait for the attacker to move in? Because I know some games kind of have like a bonus like that.
I don't remember. There's not a hold action, but but they do, because it's a long and a short action. And basically the short actions are preparing or moving or things. And the long actions are something that's going to be contested by, armor or a dodge or something.
I suppose in that case, what you would do is swap initiative to go kind of at least immediately before or right after your opponent and then take the ready action and then attack. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So be a little bit more tactical and kind of work with the party to get where you want to be. And of course, utilize the different characters' roles. Yeah. Right. Most efficiently.
Cool.
Thank you so much for joining us. And if people want to find you guys, so Chris, where are you?
I'm on Twitter, as always. HiveMind, spelled with Y's. Yeah, still.
Also on Twitter, Jampersand.
Okay, great.
And Ampersand with a J.
Oh, nice. And we'll put those in the info text so people can find those links. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us. And Jamie, I really hope to hear you on the two-player RPG.
Yeah, totally.
Okay,
thanks for having me on.
Yeah, that's great. So let's do that. And this is Weekly Idle Red Hand, so we will be back again next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.